Good morning to everyone and welcome to this ISDC webinar on outsourcing digital work under the law, the legal governance of a global workforce. My name is Matthias Wouters. I am the legal advisor on the Benelux countries for the Swiss Institute of Comparative Law. I will host today's webinar. The ISDC is very happy that so many distinguished speakers have accepted to join the invitation today for today's event. We were pleasantly surprised by the interest from the speakers in the subject, which tells you a lot about how topical it is. As mentioned in the agenda, the event will commence with an introductory presentation to the topic, which I hope will not last longer than 15 minutes. Afterwards, our speakers will each receive 15 minutes to present their perspectives on cross-border digital work. The presentations will be followed by a Q&A session. Now, let us dive into the subject of cross-border digital work. I plan to briefly mention the following elements: what is cross-border digital work, what changes are occurring in cross-border digital work, and lastly, what are the future prospects. In terms of what is digital work, we could refer to the following definition. Digital work is work performed with digital tools on digitized work objects. That type of work is associated with all of the elements listed in red, such as flexible workspaces and working hours. If we think about cross-border digital work, the definition could therefore read as follows: work performed with digital tools on digitized work objects by a worker for a client abroad. It's not important to get into too much detail regarding the definitions. They only serve to have a vague idea. Some examples of this type of work are very modern and new. We have two such examples here on the slides. One is a fast food drive-through where people would order hamburgers or tacos. Customers would think an AI is registering their order. However, it turns out that the company was actually relying on people in the Philippines working from behind their computer screens, registering the orders of the customers in the US and simply instructing the persons working in the kitchen of the drive-thru in the US about what meals are being ordered. Similarly, a company in France was selling AI systems that would detect when someone is shoplifting, stealing something from the supermarket. In reality, people in Madagascar were watching the video footage and signaling to the store that someone was probably about to steal something. In other words, in both cases, the AI is not actually accomplishing the task autonomously, and instead, cross-border digital work is what drives these interactions. Of course, there are also far less modern iterations of cross-border digital work. Think of myself, who is working from Switzerland for a Belgian law firm, for example. That too is cross-border digital work, and it is very different from the types of ghost work I just described. Anyhow, cross-border digital work comes in many forms. When looking at changes in cross-border digital work, it is evident that this type of work is growing. The following figure comes from a report written by the IMF, OECD, United Nations, World Bank, and the WTO. It measures digitally delivered services, and you can clearly see that those services are growing faster than international trading goods and other services in general. In fact, the report mentions that between 2005 and 2022, exports of digitally delivered services grew by an average of 8.1% annually, outpacing goods and other services exports. As a consequence, digitally delivered services are representing an increasingly big chunk of overall trade. Also interesting, but perhaps unsurprising, is that cross-border digital work is not only growing, there are also new participants. The next figure comes from the same study. It shows which African economies have the largest share of digitally delivered services. These services are mostly provided from Morocco, South Africa, and Ghana. Interestingly, the report stresses that the growth of these services exports in some economies, such as Egypt, Ghana, and Madagascar, has outperformed the rest of the world for several years, driven by business process outsourcing and IT industries. Thus, for example, the previous example of persons from Madagascar watching camera footage recorded in France is not just anecdotal. It is simply true that there are new participants in cross-border digital work. Coming to the next slide, as mentioned, cross-border digital work grows and there are new participants. However, in addition to this, the types of cross-border digital work are also changing. That's among other things due to the continuous expansion of the digital economy. You can think of the examples of AI training that I gave earlier, or perhaps other new digital tasks that need to be performed, such as in relation to cryptocurrencies. But perhaps even more importantly, there are many services that used to be provided locally, but that can now increasingly be digitalized and therefore provided at a distance. To explain this, let us take a detour and first explain the different modes of services supply in GATS. For some of you in the audience like myself, this might be pretty new. You can see the different modes on the slide. First, services trade can occur through the cross-border supply of services from a supplier in one country to the territory of another. Think of me working from Switzerland for a Belgian law firm. Two, you can have consumption abroad. When I travel to Italy and visit a hairdresser, that's consumption abroad. Three, you can have commercial presence abroad by establishing a presence. A clear example are international hotel chains like Hilton or others that have hotels in almost every country. Or another example are travel agencies with offices in various countries. Lastly, service providers can enter the territory of another country to perform services. A clear example are medical services when a specialized doctor travels abroad for surgery, or it may well be an engineer or any other expert. When we look at the European Union's exports of services to non-member states in 2020, we get this picture. Mode 3 is clearly still the most important mode, even if Mode 1 already presents a significant share of services. Now, what is expected to happen? Generally speaking, authors project that Mode 2 and 3 and 4 will lose in importance, becoming replaced to some extent by Mode 1. As this table from UNCTAD shows, various digital technologies and tools make it possible to offer services at a distance. Think of this webinar or any other massive open online course. Instead of people having to travel between countries, we can simply do it online in the form of cross-border digital work under Mode 1. Increasingly, various platforms and other digital tools are making it easier to work with others across borders or to sell products abroad, reducing the need to have commercial presence abroad. Also think of telemedicine, in which case doctors may no longer have to travel abroad but can use robotics to perform a surgery at a distance. These are all examples of a broader trend in which Mode 1 of GATS is arguably gaining importance. The result would be that this picture from 2020 would transform into this hypothetical picture in the future with a bigger role for Mode 1. The picture is entirely random, but I'm sure you see the overall idea. Additionally, and this is the last point I want to make, there are not only changes between the various modes of service supply, but changes are also occurring within Mode 1 itself. For more detailed information, I can refer you to this publication by Umarani and Marianne Fuhrer. They describe how a company in, let's say, Europe may already have been using a company on the African continent, a business processing outsourcing facility in the past. The BPO facility would rely on local workers that would then perform the tasks agreed upon between the European and the African company, but ultimately for the European company. Think of someone working in a call center in South Africa, for example, that picks up the phone when you call to a big European airline company. These practices have been occurring for a long time. However, increasingly, it becomes possible to remove BPO companies and other companies on the African continent that operate in between the worker and the company in the global north. These intermediate companies are removed from the value chain and instead direct links are created between the worker and the company abroad, mediated through platforms and other digital technologies. In other words, within Mode 1, there are changes in terms of how these services are being performed, and those changes may not always impact workers in a beneficial way. Having said all of this, what about future prospects? Well, I think it's important to first remark the policies and the regulatory environment. What we talk about during this webinar are only one piece of a much larger story. Various other factors influence the development of the transnational digital services sector. This publication below on the slide can provide you with more information on these other aspects. if we stick to the regulatory dimension, it is proven that regulatory reforms do make a difference. Take the following excerpt from an OECD publication on key issues in digital trade. It states that reforms to make regulations less restrictive can bring significant payoffs. Estimates suggest that an important domestic regulatory reform is associated with an increase in total exports of 145%. The effect is highest for digitally deliverable services, with increases in exports of more than 200%, and other services exports also more than 200%. With such a discourse, it is likely that less restrictive regulations may indeed come about. The consequences for employment protections could be significant. For those who have more of a background in employment and labor law, they will obviously know the credo that labor is not a commodity. It expresses the idea that labor should not be treated merely as a marketable good, similar to products or property. Workers have dignity, workers have rights and needs that should be respected and protected. Therefore, workers can, for example, bargain collectively to set minimum wages, ensuring that they have a decent living. In principle, one cannot undercut that wage in the name of competition then. This credo, which has been transposed at the domestic level through various employment and labor laws, well, it risks clashing with more economic considerations that one comes across in the literature on international trade. That's of course not the first time, but it becomes very salient, extremely visible in the case of cross-border digital work. The work of Professor Richard Baldwin provides a taste of this when he speaks about arbitrage. Arbitrage refers to the practice of capitalizing on a price difference between two or more markets. So in his words, when studying the relationship between Colombia and the US, Professor Baldwin remarks that on average, a Colombian worker earns $2.2 per hour working on occupations that are teleworkable, while the average wage for such an occupation in the US is $25. The fact that US wages are on average more than 11 times higher suggests that there are plenty of arbitrage opportunities. In his view, globalization will not stop as long as there is arbitrage, and cross-border digital work will provide many of these opportunities in the future. In another but related publication, of which you can see a citation on the next slide, Professor Baldwin remarks that from a Colombian perspective, it is interesting to try and benefit from this high degree of arbitrage. With that goal in mind, he points to possible legal barriers that could restrict the exports of what he calls telemigration services, another term for cross-border digital work. Too high such protections for Colombian workers could end any telemigration initiatives, he warns. Of course, all of these remarks probably make complete sense from the perspective that he takes. That's not so much the issue. The problem is that there are no holistic discussions about these subjects, allowing for different perspectives on the benefits and disadvantages of cross-border digital work to be reconciled. Considering these types of tensions, the ISDC considered a good moment to organize a webinar on cross-border digital work. It is a subject that is still understudied and where various areas of law meet. Obviously, international trade law and labor law are important, but one could also think of corporate social responsibility, for example. That is why we have invited various excellent speakers who can shine a light on these different aspects of cross-border digital work. First, we are very interested in hearing what Professor Mira Aburi and Colofelo Kugler have to say about digital work under global trade law. They are both renowned experts in that area of law. After their presentation, we will give the floor to Funda Ustekspilda, who has been working for quite a while now at the Oxford Internet Institute, where she is engaged in the Fair Work project. Some of you might know Fair Work's excellent work. And for those who don't, it will undoubtedly be insightful to hear Funda's perspectives on how people performing cross-border digital work experience this line of work. Last but not least, Professor Shelley Marshall will provide us with her views on the draft EU directive on corporate sustainability due diligence and its potential to govern outsourced digital work. Particularly interesting is that she is not only focused on that directive, but highlights the possible alternatives. Afterwards, we will have time for a Q&A. I hope you will greatly enjoy the various presentations.